hell?
Everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like GEICO is more than just a company that can save you money. GEICO also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Go!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Hey, almighty ballerettes and ballerinos?
Ballerinos, kid.
Boleros. That's a gas station.
Bolero is a gas station.
Yeah, definitely. Well, hey, you know what isn't a gas station? A podcast. And you know what is a podcast? Almighty Ballin, the Almighty Podcast, specifically Unguarded Shooting Edition with me and my editor-in-chief of almightyballer.com, Michael Luxembourg, a.k.a. Lux. Michael.
Hey, everyone out there in podcast town. Welcome to our show.
And it's wonderful to be back talking.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. Not just for you, though. Also for me, because, you know, for those of you who haven't heard the news, first of all, you're in for a treat. You're in for a treat.
Okay, come on, man. You're better than that.
You're in for a treat. So the Almighty Baller Podcast Network at almightyballer.com, as well as blogtalkradio.com/ABPN, we have added a new expansion called the A-Team. And the A-Team, the A is for Almighty, and the team is because each podcast covers a specific team. We've got Heat Beat, we've got Warriors Huddle, we've got the Undebeatables, Pacers Podcast, we've got
the Debatables.
Red Nation. Oh yeah, but the Debatables hasn't been added yet.
Okay, well, coming soon. Spoiler teaser surprise.
With Jordan Malley of Straight Outta College and Austin Hutchinson, formerly of Ball by the Numbers, but I think we're thinking that we're gonna go with analytics in the association, because, you know, numbers.
Yeah.
Anyways, go ahead, check those out. Again, almightyballer.com, blogtalkradio.com/ABPN. Check out your favorite team. If it's not there yet, it will be soon. But this episode is brought to you by GlassesUSA.com, but also from the Draft Fantasy app. At some point during the recording of this podcast, I'm going to have to go check what the promo code and promo URLs are, because apparently we were promoting the wrong ones.
It's not Almighty?
No, it's not. It's just don't worry about what it is. The promo code is Almighty for Glasses USA, though.
All right, great.
Yeah, and that gets you 55% off your first purchase. And I just got some great black frames that I already misplaced. But I really want to find them because they are my best looking pair of glasses, and I highly suggest Glasses USA. But I also highly suggest that we get to the program, Lux.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, starting off, game number one we're going to break down. Magic versus Clippers. The Clippers won this fight 113-108, and Aaron Gordon had a career high 33 points. So, Lux, my question for you is, were you impressed by how he scored that 33 points? And as far as you could tell, how was he doing that?
Okay, so the question was, I was impressed is a mixed one, right? Because I guess I'll answer the questions in reverse order, and that'll help. So how he did it,
have asked him in reverse order.
Yeah, well, it's all right. We'll straighten things out here. Yeah. How he was doing it was a lot of cuts, a lot of finding space, the way he usually scores, cutting offensive rebounds, running the floor. The big difference tonight was he was hitting threes. He was 4 of 8 from three. And he really seemed to be able to take advantage of the one-on-one defensive matchups. I think that was sort of a big advantage for the Clipper, or for the Magic, rather, in playing Ibaka and Biombo at the same time. Kind of forced the the Clippers to put DeAndre and Blake on the two Orlando big men and let Gordon go to work on smaller defenders like
Luke and Bamute was out.
Yeah, so. Bamute was out with an injury.
Right.
So he was going against like Rivers and
Felton,
Redick and Johnson.
Yeah.
And dudes who just don't have the athleticism like anywhere close to athleticism that Gordon has, which like let him like sort of do a lot of the stuff that he was doing in college that made everyone go crazy, which was just sort of, oh, it's a foot race and then strength contest to get to this rim, but I know I will win them both because next to me you are a child.
Right.
He says to Raymond Felton. And so as far as how it was going, it was like that. And as far as whether or not I was impressed with it, is a mixed answer because yeah, it was impressive to watch, but the question of like how replicable is it against sort of quality defense or like a matchup that doesn't so strongly favor Gordon, is a tougher one. Especially with sort of the poor free throw shooting, stuff like that. Just, I don't know. It makes it hard to project much off this game.
Sure.
But it was definitely awesome to watch. And he did a lot of really cool stuff. He hit a behind-the-head alley-oop. He missed a reverse layup and then got the rebound as it came off the opposite side of the rim and just dunked it with his opposite hand. Like, he did all sorts of crazy business.
Yeah.
But a lot of it was felt like stuff that a bigger three or a four would have been able to stop him from doing a lot of that stuff as well.
Sure, yeah. And I think it really drew attention to a couple of things. I think, first of all, it drew attention to, I understand why Doc Rivers has gone ultimately with Luke Mbamute as the starting small forward, because I feel like what the Clippers were really lacking, despite winning barely though against a Orlando Magic team that should have been severely overmatched, for parts of the game that Austin Rivers was in, playing essentially a wing position, that was a consistent defensive matchup because of the Magic size and athleticism, or mismatch rather, and so. Not only was he being beat defensively in a way that Luke and Mbamute generally is not, but Luke plays on a string much better than Austin Rivers does. Just, Austin Rivers, I don't play much NBA 2K anymore, but, I assume there's still offensive awareness, defensive awareness, and Austin Rivers' offensive awareness and defensive awareness is so bad. And he doesn't pay attention to cues, or if he is paying attention, he doesn't follow the directions of, DeAndre Jordan and Chris Paul trying to direct traffic. Sometimes you aren't going to be told exactly what you should do. You just need to know. And he's really bad at that as well. So this is not a high powered Orlando Magic offense, especially with Vucevic out.
Well, and I think that we saw that. I mean, they scored 108 points, and like you said, Gordon at 33. We kind of saw like the fundamental sort of weaknesses of their offense at play, precisely because like
the Magic or the Clippers?
The Magic.
Yeah.
Because like when you have a starting lineup of Rivers, Redick, Paul, Jordan, and Griffin, you have a sort of bigger, more athletic lineup like the Magic do, like you're gonna find physical mismatches in that starting five. And the fact that Gordon was really the only way they were able to take advantage of those mismatches sort of speaks to sort of the inflexibility and sort of lack of creativity on their on the offensive end for them.
Well, so Evan Fournier also scored, I think, 23 points, but he was up in the 20s.
He had 24. He had a good game.
Jeff Green had 19 points, but I guess the point that I was making is that the Magic scoring 108 points to me is less striking because of the Magic. It's more striking to me because this Clippers defense started out the season just locking people down, and it steadily declined. And of course, they had Luke and Mbamute out for this game because of like ACL soreness or something like that.
Right,
so
joint sprain.
Yeah, so with Luke and Mbamute out for this game, I think that this is the worst that the Clippers defense has looked so far this season. The Orlando Magic did not look like it was flowing well. It looked like, you know, what was happening is the Magic kept finding, as the shot clock went on, maybe the Clippers would nail their first few rotations on offensive actions, their first few responses defensively, but eventually the Magic would find a crease and exploit it, and the Magic are not a team that you should let do that, you know?
Right, I mean, that's sort of, I guess, what I was trying to get at, is that, like, this was a reflection of the failure on the Clippers' end, precisely because, like, even the Magic were able to take advantage and find some seams, like, the number of seams the Magic found, given that they were the Magic, is extraordinarily high. Because we could watch their offense sort of flounder through long stretches of the game anyways.
Yeah, that's true. And they were
still able to exploit sort of just like basic failures in the Clippers' end. The only sort of redeeming point to all of this, as far as Austin Rivers goes, is that he did have himself an offensive game.
Yeah.
And that at least helps counteract some of the defensive weakness. Like, getting 25 on 12 shots from Austin Rivers is huge for the Clippers. Like, that is a major...
Yeah,
happening
and,
for them.
And most of the shots that I saw him take were at least catch and shoot shots. You know, my thing, I'm just about as low, or I'm just about as much anti Austin Rivers as you can find, because I just feel like he has really poor decision making and awareness and basketball IQ, all that fun stuff. But you know, it's to me even like, well, when Clippers has when Rivers has a good game, it's just because he hits his dumb shots. And in this game, you know, a catch and shoot three is kind of never a dumb shot. Although he did have the occasional, like, why are you pulling up from three?
Well, that was my favorite,
with a hand in your face.
Well, not my favorite.
You're not Steph Curry.
That was one of my favorite moments of the game. Was Rivers made back to back corner catch and shoot threes. And then like dribbled up and walked into a pull up and bricked it hard, and it just was like, Austin Rivers, stay in your lane. Like,
there is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Allergies. Pollen in the air. Dogs in the house. Mold in the basement. Whatever triggers your allergy symptoms, it can really hold you back. Break through with Allegra 5-in-1 Relief. Allegra works fast, won't make you drowsy, provides 24-hour multi-symptom relief, and it's effective every day. Break through allergies with Allegra. Starts working in 1 hour, use only as directed. Guaranteed or your money back. Visit Allegra.com.
Yeah.
He was displaying, like, what hit... Insofar as Austin Rivers has a functional NBA skill set, it is that he's good at in like a sort of Ian Clark kind of way, good at running around and finding open space and hitting catch and shoot shots. I honestly like Clark for that better than Rivers at this point, but like, it's a similar kind of tactic.
Yeah.
And when he was doing that tonight, partially because of a disorganized Orlando defense and partially because of the amount of attention that Blake, DeAndre and Chris Paul draw, and also partially a good effort on his end, he was doing really good work getting open and hitting threes. But the problem was that every time he wasn't doing that, he was just sort of useless.
Yeah. So a few
he
more.
He did lead the team in minutes, though, which is crazy.
Yeah. Whatever. He's the coach's son.
Yeah, that's what happens when you play for your dad, I guess.
Yeah. So a few more things that we should touch on before we move on. The Magic are coming off of a night prior to this Clippers game where, against the Atlanta Hawks, they scored 131 points, hit 15 three-pointers, had 36 assists, and shot 58.6 from the field. And, you know, I recall a similar stretch of games because, you know, the Magic started out kind of shaky, but were sort of winning their games, and then they lost a whole bunch of games, and then they won a whole bunch of games, and, you know, they lost tonight, but it was a good battle. But it seems to me like, you know, this is a really streaky team. And that's what they were sort of like last year, too. I mean, come December, they looked like they were going to be a playoff team because, you know, they put together that really good either January or December where they went above 500 and then just everything fell apart. And so I think it's interesting. It's interesting to me that this Magic team continues to be so streaky, so inconsistent, so up and down. And so I was wondering what you thought the root cause, what you think is the root cause of that.
I think I had a couple of opinions.
Because they've had so much roster overturn, and now they have a new coach. So it's like, what is this coming
from? They've turned the roster over a little bit, but they haven't turned over like the sort of like fundamental like ethos of the roster, really. Like, they've always been about like young athletes, or at least the past couple of years. They've been building a team around like having just like young, very athletic, pretty good defender players on their squad, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that that contributes to this kind of streakiness on two levels. One being they're a threat to go like arctically cold at any time and just like never score points for 48 minutes. Just cause they don't have any like traditional creators on the roster. And at the same time, they can play defense as well as they want, but other teams are always a threat to get hot at any given moment. And that, at the same time, can sort of spell doom for them. And so I think it's just easy for them to get caught up in streaks of getting disheartened by a game where they play well and the other team scores a bunch of points anyways. Then they're let down for the next game, so they don't play defense as hard. Then they play defense really hard, overexert themselves, and start missing shots. You know what I mean? There's just a lot of ways things can go wrong for the Magic. The way their roster is constructed now and the way it's been constructed in the past, that I feel like contribute to them to like being sort of a streaky team. Also, I think that they are sort of ideally designed to beat up on bad teams and sort of unable to overcome particularly good teams.
I think that, you know, it's been more. I really liked your first answer to that, and I know that, you know, you weren't saying, you know, a second answer, you were just elaborating, but I think you hit the nail on the head with, you know, young, athletic, high variance. And that's what you're gonna get with a team that's built like that. You know, the Western Conference equivalent is the Timberwolves.
I just don't want to talk about the Wolves.
Yeah, but
they did have a comeback though,
you know,
and they won.
Yeah, that was great. But you know, similar sort of principle. It's like, you know, I don't think the Magic are quite as talented, but they are a little bit older. They do have some more veterans. They do have some more talent. But, you know, I think the word you used was ethos. And I think that that's sort of the bottom line where, you know, you have like an older veteran team, sort of like the Cavs or the Spurs. You can have a built-in system that won't collapse if you inject too much young talent in, right? But eventually you inject too much randomness where there isn't cohesion and there isn't a system, and at that point you're relying on things that have so many variables, like whether or not Aaron Gordon is going to hit 4-for-8 from three. You know, like the Spurs can do their thing and they'll be good, they'll beat the teams they should beat, and you know, almost beat the teams that they shouldn't. But the Magic are just going to be really good one night and really bad the other night. And then the Timberwolves are going to be really good the first half and then really bad the second half and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think that that's pretty spot on. Like, they – I guess this is where I was getting at, this idea that, like, they are a tough matchup for bad teams and, like, a not-so-tough matchup for good teams. Just in that, like, bad teams that have stagnant, sort of slower ball movement, the crazy athleticism on the Magic can just, like, stall that stuff out very easily. Sure. Whereas teams with, like, effective ball movement and good offensive sets can really mess with sort of their failures of playing defense on a string, or their sort of overexcitement to go for steals and stuff like that. And I think that that speaks to the same thing, where it's, like, these are just things you get with young players in the NBA, where learning team defense takes some time. Like, knowing how to pick your spots takes some time. Being able to read what the other team is going to do takes some time. And they just haven't had that kind of time yet. And so the amount of talent they have is pretty vast, especially on the defensive end. But the ability that for that talent to execute is still obviously in development.
Yeah, and, you know, I actually have a fair bit of faith in Vogel to do that. You know, he... made the finals, you know, or not the finals, but he made the playoffs and then did surprisingly well, even with Paul George out because he broke his leg, with a team that was really, really low on talent, but, you know, was sort of athletic, sort of scrappy, and sort of remind me a lot of the Magic. And, you know, it's because over time, Vogel's going to teach you how to run his defensive system, and then at least you can fall back on that if your offense isn't working.
Yeah, I tend to believe in Frank Vogel.
And his defense, the team's defense has gotten steadily better. And then, you know, it's weird. They've gone on this explosive offensive stretch and not played the best defense, but I'm willing to attribute that to randomness slash, you know, the inevitable casualness that comes with being the inevitable casual defense that you play when you're just on fire hitting 60% of your shots. So, yeah, Vucevic was out. So that meant they got to play small ball more. And despite that, they started Bismack, Ibaka, and Gordon. And, we've talked about, you know, the strategy of playing with your starting lineup, you know, defensive minded and playing big, you know, because traditional lineups typically start, you know, sort of like the Warriors play Zaza or Bogut, right? And then even though their best lineup may be the death lineup, they'll start traditionally. So like Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, LeBron, for example. And so I think that those three guys, even though they're playing super big, and those were the only three bigs that they played, they didn't play any other power forwards or centers, unless you want to count Jeff Green. And so I sort of like that. You know, they had their lockdown defensive guys and their rebounding guys up against the Clippers starters, and then, you know, had their bench guys and were playing some small ball in minutes where they weren't playing against elite Clippers talent. So, I mean, I think the Magic were well coached in this game. I think that, you know, they ran their sets and struggled because of lack of individual talent, and because, you know, players on the Magic right now are being asked to do things that they're not entirely comfortable with. But I mean, overall, it was a decent showing for the Magic, and I do think they're on a decent little roll.
I mean, it does seem like Vogel's getting a better sense of what he's messing around with. Because like I said at the beginning, and I think it's worth revisiting, with the lack of Mbamute, like, that lineup of Gordon, Biombo, and Ibaka was, like, a real problem for the Clippers on defense. Like, it really felt, because it freed up Gordon to have a smaller defender on him constantly.
Yeah.
And it really felt like Frank Vogel before the game was like, here's what we're going to do. Like, their bigs are going to cover our bigs. Aaron, that means you're going to have some space to work. Like, go to work. Like, green light, go and do your thing.
Yeah.
And that's what he did, to the tune of 33 points on 21 shots. Like, he had himself a night. Could have been more if my dude could shoot free throws.
You know what? That Orlando front court is what you would want to pair with the Trailblazers back court.
Oh yeah.
That's what you would want. You would want CJ, Dame, and then Gordon, Serge, Biombo.
And that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Because it's three dudes who can protect the rim, roll to the rim, and get rebounds. And
yeah.
Can also, for the most part, defend, like, at least 1-4 and probably 1-5.
Yeah, and that's sort of similar to what we were talking about earlier with Valanciunas not really fitting super well, or at least parts of his skill set not fitting super well, because the Raptors should be running their offense through DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, so it's like, you know, you're sort of wasting some of his skill sets, because you just want guys setting big screens, doing utility stuff, letting CJ, Dame do their thing. I really don't like Elfrid Payton, and I mean, he's particularly a bad fit for this team. Maybe if you put some spacing around him, it would be a little bit different.
He could be a really good second unit point guard on a team that has like a shoot heavy bench unit,
like the Suns.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the Sun, like PJ Tucker and my dog is being such a dick this whole time. She's been being a total dick.
But yeah, like the Suns would be good, yeah, or so, the Celtics. Like, getting Alfred Payton on a team.
Yeah, like, I mean, but Marcus Smart is basically that.
Yeah, that's true.
But, yeah, but Marcus Smart sort of thrives in that role.
Yeah, and I think there's space for that player in the NBA, but there's not a ton of space for that player on the Orlando Magic as currently constituted.
Yeah, yeah. You good to move on? Grizzlies, Cavs?
I'm trying to think if I have any more Clippers thoughts. I mean, Chris Paul's, like, amazing.
Do you listen to True Hoop?
Yeah.
You know that Jameel Hill drop? Is clips gone clip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically what we got tonight. They were about as unimpressive scoring 113 points. You could, like, it just felt so casual. Although I will say that Blake Griffin was very good about having a sense of the moment. Like, it felt like every time the Magic pushed it to, like, two or three, he would just get an and one basket, and then all of a sudden it would be, like, a six-point game again.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought Blake was good. Thought Austin Rivers had himself an offensive game. But, yeah, I don't think there was anything too special about this game for the Clippers. It was a pretty classic Clippers game.
Clips gonna clip.
The starters lit it up. All five starters in double figures. The bench scored 17 points. They hit their shots. They did a good job getting to their basket. And, I mean, that's about it.
Yeah. Moving right along, or actually, you want to talk a little bit? Yeah, this is how we'll split it up. We're talking about three games tonight, so I guess now we'll do Glasses USA, and then we'll do draft next. So
we can talk about Glasses USA since you have glasses and my vision's perfect.
Yeah, but let me tell you, and you know, Lux, you can chip in, but you don't wear glasses, but you know, you could get a pair of sunglasses or. It's always confused me that people respond so negatively, generally, to the idea of wearing glasses as, like, a fashion statement, because it's like, if it wasn't a fashion statement, wouldn't we all just wear the same glasses?
Yeah, and, I mean, I look good in a pair of non-prescription glasses. That's
right.
That's a fact.
I know a lot of girls who look really cute in glasses, and, I mean, I feel like that's a good recommendation.
No, I look cute in glasses. I'm not even a girl and I can do it.
I think that you're a cute girl. I think you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen.
Yes.
If you want to be like Lux and be the most beautiful woman or handsomest man on earth, then you can go to glassesusa.com and you can try on pairs of glasses. It's a lot of fun. You just take a picture of yourself and align your eyes with the, trying on window, and then you can, just try on a whole bunch of glasses, and that's fun. But the funnest part about going to Glasses USA is using that promo code Almighty, Almighty, and supporting the podcast.
Don't they have that cool digital try-on thing?
Yeah, that's what I was just talking about.
Yeah. Because we fixed it, but yeah, that thing still blows. That thing still blows my mind.
Yeah. They craft all of their lenses themselves. That's part of why it's so cheap, even before the 55% discount. I got to get designer glasses. I was picking them out and putting in the lenses, and then I calculated it with that Almighty Baller or Almighty promo code, and. They were fully decked out, all the options, designer lenses, for under $100, like $60-$70. It was pretty remarkable, especially after that 55% discount. And, the reason they can give you such low prices is because, think about it, right? Like if you go to a retail store and you pick out a pair of glasses, right, you're paying for that whole glasses store. And all those models and stuff that you see with all the glasses and all those display cases, you're paying for those. You're paying for all of the advertising. You're paying for that glasses store to send your prescription to a lab to cut the glasses. GlassesUSA.com, though, has their own glasses cutters, like, in-house. So they cut out the middleman. They do their own shipping mechanisms and stuff. So you're cutting out that. There's no retail markup because it's all online. So every step of the process, you know, they handle it in-house. So, you know, you can customize your order. It's easier to get a rebate. You know, there's a money-back guarantee. And you can trade in your glasses if they're defective and get a free one, store credit, or a free new pair, or store credit, or just get your money back. You know, you have all these options. And, you know, it's really the complete glasses buying experience. So, again, that promo code is Almighty. You can get 55% off. And, I mean, really, just give it a try. I couldn't suggest it more. Like, you know, Lux over here really likes doing live reads. I really don't like it. I'm not really good at pretending to like things that I don't like.
I'm so good at it.
But you know, I really, really liked my glasses. They looked great. And I really, really like glassesusa.com. And I reached out to them personally, because I felt that they would be a good match for this podcast. So, please, you know, support the podcast. Let them know that they made the right decision. And trust me, you know, glassesusa.com is a great service. Use that promo code Almighty and get 55% off. So that was a pretty long live read. I guess we won't do draft. But I feel like I should look up the draft thing. Cause
we should do the draft thing. We'll just do it after this game.
Well, but, I mean, I only want so much advertisement in a podcast.
That's fair.
Just next time we'll do draft. But yeah, draft, it's ABPN is the promo code you want to use, or go to playdraft.com/ABPN. It's a DFS site, and you get, I think you get matched up to... Yeah. You get matched up to $600 on your first deposit. So if you put in like $20, then they match it for $40, you know? So you can get like 600 free bucks essentially.
So let's move on to this Memphis Cleveland game.
All right. Let's go ahead and do that.
So here's a fun stat. There was exactly zero parts of this game where Cleveland was ahead.
Yeah, so I mean,
were exactly no seconds.
When we talked about this game going into it, I think we just both agreed that we just wanted to watch a Grizzlies game, because there's been a lot of hype about how the Grizzlies have, you know, not only not dropped off since Mike Conley went out, but despite playing, you know, the flotsam of the NBA, much like Jaeger was last year, you know, they're performing really well. In fact, they have the best defense in the league, 99.7 defensive rating, and they're the only team under 100. So, you know, I tweeted that the Grizzlies were holding the NBA champions to 29 points with 2 minutes left, which was true. But Kyrie sat, Kevin Love sat, LeBron sat. This was not really a game. I think we just mostly wanted this because we wanted to watch Memphis and see what their deal is. And how they're doing what they're doing. And, you know, do you want to start on the defensive end?
Yeah. That's the big takeaway, right? Is that watching the Grizzlies, feels almost like watching like a mid-major college basketball team. Not in terms of skill level, obviously, because the Grizzlies are vastly more skilled than like,
are they?
Creighton or something. Yeah, they are. Vastly more so, but every single player on the team is locked in and trying so hard on defense on every single possession, in a way you don't see with the vast majority of NBA teams.
And you know, I think that the return of Tony Allen has a lot to do with that too. Tony Allen is truly infectious.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. I mean, between Tony Allen and Marc Gasol, you have two very like vocal, and active defensive leaders who can both direct traffic and also play phenomenal defense on their own. And so it makes sense that you can build a team around those as your defensive anchors, and they will get the rest of the team to bring the intensity, and that they will sort of cover up the gaps in terms of skill level. Because, like, you know, you're playing, like, I think it's Andrew Harrison is the Harrison that they're playing, right?
Not Harrison. I mean,
You're playing a Harrison twin.
Some.
Right. Yeah. And you're playing Jermichael Green. And you're playing.
Jermichael Green's okay.
Sure.
And you're playing, but, yeah, I mean.
And you're playing Troy Williams. Okay. Like, these aren't defensive studs they're throwing out with Gasol and Allen, but they are getting the most out of them. Not just, I think part of it's a great coaching job from David Fizdale, but I think also just the on-the-floor leadership is working really well. And they're also playing a system that sort of allows those players to, as like, it's one of those systems not dissimilar to sort of Thibodeau's system, where you don't have to be a great individual defender, you just have to follow the dang rules.
Yeah.
And as long as you follow the dang rules, the defense is going to work.
Yeah.
You
have to be locked in, and, you know, I feel like that's really it. You have to be locked in, and it's not just following the rules, it's following the rules as clearly expressed vocally and loudly in your direction by Marc Gasol and Tony Allen.
Right, and that's the third
part. They don't make mistakes.
Right, yeah, that's the third part for sure. It's like, you have to know the rules, and then you have to know that, so you know what to do if they don't tell you what to do.
The rule is, like, listen to them.
Well, right, you have to know what to do if they don't tell you what to do, but then if they do tell you what to do, you sort of do that.
Yeah.
And between those three things, and sort of the deference to Allen and Gasol on the defensive end, and the commitment to Fizdale's system, like, they play extraordinary defense.
Yeah.
And they did tonight. I mean, even, like, I mean, obviously the Cavaliers weren't playing three of the best players in the league, so it makes a difference, but they still were just getting smacked around for long stretches of this game.
Yeah, I mean, I almost, like, don't even want to specifically talk about this game. I should record a Cavs Grizzlies podcast. I don't know. Actually, that's what I should do. I should record a Cavs Grizzlies podcast, because there's not a lot of takeaways for this game specifically. And that's not really the point of unguarded shooting. We should just move on to Jazz Thunder.
Well, the one thing that I think is worth highlighting is that Troy Daniels showed up again in the NBA to score 20 points in a row.
So a lot of his former teammates are like, say, who's like the best shooter you've ever played with? And they'll say Troy Daniels. I mean, yeah. Troy Daniels is like an amazing shooter. He just, you know, lacks a whole lot of other requisite NBA skills.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree, but it's just like, I love how he'll sporadically pop up every couple months and drop 20 points on someone and then disappear into the ether, you know? And this was Troy Daniels. And he signed a 3-year deal with the Grizz. So, I mean, this could be good for them. I mean, he's the kind of player that they want to have. Like, even if he's not, you know, all around the most skilled dude in the world, he can shoot and he will definitely follow the rules on defense. He did that tonight. He was not bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he also wasn't playing against anyone spectacular.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, if he can be adequate on defense and give them some much-needed shooting, that'll really open up their offense in a lot of ways. And that's sort of always been the issue in Memphis. But, yeah, I mean, this game, there's not a ton to talk about. I mean, we watched it, and then nothing that interesting happened for 48 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it was
pretty
over.
Much. A game that was pretty interesting, Jazz versus Thunder, and, you know, the Jazz are good.
So good.
The first thing we talked about is how a lot of teams that struggle offensively will sort of by default play a half-court offense. You know, the Magic are a lot like this. When the Magic are really bad, you know, they don't have any ball handlers who can, you know, get into the open break and sort of make something happen. You know, the Thunder aren't the best offensive team, but they have Russell Westbrook, though, right? So there's no one really like that who's just hyper explosive. There's no Russell Westbrook on the Jazz. So, you know, they, you know, play a slow down game, but, you know, just because you're not Russell Westbrook doesn't mean that you're not a very competent to very good offensive player. It just might be in the half court. And, you know, honestly, Rudy Gobert is great. I mean,
I love Rudy Gobert.
Right. We were watching the Jazz broadcast, and right now, or as of before the game, he was averaging 1.99 points per shot.
I mean, that's only going to go up because he made all of his shots.
Right. And that would be the highest in NBA history. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
He's phenomenal. And just the Jazz in general. I mean, the Jazz are top 10 in offense and defense.
They're very good defensively, yeah.
They're very good on both ends, man. And
now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
And like you're saying, that offense is playing the half court is not the result of having a lack at point guard or lack at other positions. It's
although that, you know, I mean, it's just their point guard is they do miss George Hill all the time. They are wrecked with injuries.
Yeah.
It's just not the particular way that they're.
Their team is just
killed that.
Yeah, know? Well, and it's like we talked about this too. I think that these two things sort of interrelate. That they have a ton of depth and a really malleable roster. Like they can sort of create a ton of different lineups with the people that they have to sort of put pressure on different parts of opposing teams' defenses and offenses. And I think that playing in the half court really allows them to exploit the mismatches that they can generate with their depth. Right, that getting in the half court, setting up their offense, running a few pick and rolls, all of a sudden you have, you know, Andre Robertson regarding Gobert, or you have Gordon Hayward matched up on Steven Adams. And, like, this can just happen with just through the pick and rolls and moving their offense around.
Yeah.
And that's what they were doing all night. And I think the half court, like, the half court offense is really, really well executed and really well run, and that enables them to take the most advantage of having all these different lineups that they can throw out there.
So, and, you know, off the bench, it was pretty nuts. The big takeaway for me for this Jazz offense was that when Boris Diaw was in, he was running the offense, and I think he led the team in assists. I think he was at six or seven.
He had six.
Yeah, so six assists. And then when Boris Diaw wasn't in, basically Ingles, was seizing the means of production.
Yeah, classic Ingles.
He was the means of production. He was the facilitator. So they're running their offense through their bigs because that they just happen to have these two super versatile, rangy, stretchy, mobile in a weird type of way. I mean, Boris Diaw is 38 years old. I mean, he's a particular type of mobile, but he plays off the dribble a lot, and so does, Ingles, sort of. Actually, Ingles doesn't really, but Ingles distributes the ball well.
Yeah, he does.
And so I guess, you know, one thing I wanted to bring up is, like, that's cool and all, but, I mean, Dante Exum was there, and not only was he not able... is this his junior year? I think his third year.
His third year.
Yeah, so it's his third year in the league. It doesn't seem like he's capable of running an offense. And he basically got bumped from the starters by Shelvin Mack.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's part of it. I think that part of it in this game in particular, because in a couple other recent Jazz games I've watched where Exum's done, I mean, nothing super good, but he's done some stuff.
Nah.
And he's been given opportunities. I think part of that, this game, this speaks to like the versatility of their team, is that they were able to say, all right, Dante can't handle Westbrook. It's not going to happen. But Shelvin Max, like a stockier dude, is better equipped to like handle those like just impact drives. Ingles is a bigger dude. Like, I think that it was smart to get Exum away from Russell Westbrook, because when Exum was on the court, Westbrook abused him.
Yeah, but I mean, so what's the point of Exum then? He can't make outside shots, he can't run an offense, and if he can't defend Russell Westbrook, I mean, when at his best, he was hitting corner threes and playing lockdown defense for that iteration of the Jazz last year where the primary ball handler was Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, well, 2 years ago he missed last year, right? Or was it?
No.
He missed his first year and then he played last year.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. I don't know.
Well, whatever. So, yeah, you're right. But, you know, the point is, though, that I think any possibility, and this isn't true at all, but it's beginning to look increasingly unlikely that Dante Exum is the player that I think Utah Jazz fans, and I was pretty high on Dante Exum, but it doesn't look like he's going to be that player, and that's fine. You know, sometimes the athleticism and the frame and the build doesn't translate in the same way that Giannis is, you know, athleticism. But I mean, Dante Exum ostensibly should be a lot better than he is, but he just, you know, isn't putting it all together. And that puts the Jazz in an interesting position. I mean, especially with George Hill, who's injured right now. But when he was on the court, I mean, he was leading the league in plus minus and was amazing. It puts the Jazz in an interesting position where it's like, what direction do you want to take this team? And yeah, I mean, actually, that's a good transition into another thing about this Jazz team that I think we really liked. Not only are they flexible in terms of timeline, because they could go, you know, win now and make certain moves and allow things and allow the roster to shake out in a certain way that they can contend right now or try to, or they could rebuild sort of around like Rodney Hood and Dante Exum and Rudy Gobert and stuff. So not only are they flexible in that regard, but their lineups are just super flexible too. And I think we were both really enjoying that.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Like, it's awesome to see a team that's composed in this sort of like permeable kind of way. Like, you see a lot of NBA teams, even the best ones, are like, these are the lineups we run out. This is the way we win games. We're going to win games by doing our thing and winning our games. By doing it our way. Even when it's not working. And the Jazz have, like, a methodology, a lot of, like, funnel all the drives towards Gobert and make sure you stay cutting on the baseline to create space for Hood and Hayward up top and for Gobert in the middle. Like, they have methodologies, but they don't need to trot out the same lineup. They don't need to use the exact same iterations of those methodologies every time because they're willing to adjust in a way that other teams aren't really equipped to always do. Teams like the Warriors and the Spurs are very good precisely because they have that adjustability.
Yeah.
And the Jazz are sort of showing that maybe they belong, if not in the Warriors-Jazz conversation, or in the Warriors-Spurs conversation, at least in sort of the potential upcoming threats conversation, because they have this kind of versatility on both offense and defense. They're top 10 in both categories, and they've got a couple of players who could be legit super-duper stars. Like, Rodney Hood is fantastic. Hayward's very, very good as well.
I don't think either of them could be super duper stars.
Fine, though. Or could be not even all, but borderline all stars in those two.
Yeah,
Gobert could be a super duper star.
I think he already is.
Yeah, he might even. I was about to say he might even already be that. He is incredible.
I mean, he's really, really good offensively, right?
Yeah, and
most efficient player in the league, scoring 15 points a game. And we broke down the two teams with right now. You know, ladies and gents at home, my Defensive Player of the Year candidates are Marc Gasol and Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert is I think my number one choice. It is palpably observable the profound impact he has on everything that happens on the defensive end when he's in.
Yeah, I mean,
no one wants to get near him.
Yeah, everyone's terrified of him.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Even Steven Adams looked like a little baby.
Yeah, I mean, Russell Westbrook would go straight at him, but like, he's too fast.
And well, Russell Westbrook shot
atrociously. Russ shot terribly tonight, largely because even on his drives to the basket, like, there's Rudy Gobert. And, like, so this was the thing, is that, like, there was a moment in this game that highlighted just how good and crazy athletic Gobert is and also how crazy athletic Westbrook is. Because Westbrook did one of his patented, like, jump super high from a reverse, but, like, kind of turns his body into a missile and goes, like, horizontal and puts it back over his body. And Gobert was able to get between him and the basket in a way to deflect the shot. and be so in position that Russ's hand, as it came over his face, hit Rudy Gobert in the face.
Dude, that was intentional. That was like a Draymond Green kick.
Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. But like, A, the fact that Russell Westbrook dives horizontally at a height high enough to hit Rudy Gobert in the face is also crazy. Like, it was a play that showcased the best of both of them, but that Russ would beat his defender, get to the rim, get to like take a Russ-type shot, but it would be bounce to the backboard or dink off the rim or whatever, and it wasn't happening.
Well, have a Grizzlies and Jazz podcast. I mean, to the folks at home, almightyballer.com and blogtalkradio.com/ABPN. But yeah, when I picked you up, is like, what's up with the league? All this stuff is happening.
It's getting crazy out here.
Because James Harden has had off shooting nights, but he threw a bad shooting night one time, and that was when it was George Hill and Rudy Gobert blew the Rockets hole. And this was really recently, and now I think that's exactly
against the Warriors too. In that game that they played, that was pretty close. Like, the Warriors won, but aside from, like, it was a very close game, aside from one major spurt that like put them ahead.
Yeah.
But outside of that spurt, they were doing that same thing.
The Utah Jazz, I mean, really in solo coverage, like one Westbrook, deadly. Harden, Capella, also deadly. They can cover it with just doing that with Hibbert, right? That's the best way of doing it. But tonight, it was Gaki, you know? But like, you know?
No, I mean, I say Shelvin.
It's hardly Gary Payton.
Yeah, no, you know? For sure.
They may not have the number one defense in the same way that Memphis does, but you know, because something I feel like has to give with the whole Memphis thing.
I think on that comparison, which I think is might be relevant, is that Memphis' defense, like, making up for sort of some lack of individual defensive ability.
Mm-hmm.
The Jazz will put you all on islands with Mount Gobert as a background. Right, but what the other four players are doing on the Jazz is way more pressure heavy and send on like death missions.
Yeah, that's.
But I think that where players like Harden or Westbrook or Curry or Dave Talent with the Memphis defenders, even if they're doing their executing defense as well as possible, they can maximize that difference. Whereas with the Jazz, like the Jazz execute, but they also have tremendous that Memphis' defense doesn't always.
Primary differences, and there's so many different ways to run an effective NBA defense, because there's more square foot that you have adapted, and you know, Vogel sort of popularized this with Rudy Gobert in one-on-one coverage could cover a Harden Capella that we don't require any help. You know, we can cover it one-on-one, and it's profound because they're pretty much the only guys who I can think of who can do that.
Get off his man and up so fast.
Yeah.
That man's lateral movement and his ability to get up. Hassan Whiteside might be the only comparable defender in terms of just the ability. I think he's still capable of doing that, but he just doesn't do it as much. And you can imagine where Carl Anthony Towns gets that skill down. I just want them to be so bad.
I was just yakking.
You're just being facetious. Man, he's just such an incredible athlete in the middle and is so good at recognizing plays and taking the right moves and getting up to block shots. And that just gives him so much leeway.
Yeah. I think that's exactly right.
And he's...
His nickname should be Rudy Goodbear.
I feel like there are so many better nicknames for him.
Yeah, well, Stifle Tower. Yeah. I mean, that's... Do you like the Slim Reaper for Kevin Durant?
I did. I was so mad when he was like, "Don't call me that. I'm a good boy." He was like, "I am on the good team. I'm not a death man."
Yeah,
that made me so upset.
But then he is a death man.
It made me so upset because Slim Reaper is a sick nickname.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Speaking of sick nicknames, thank you for listening to Unguarded Shooting.
I guess that's a segue.
Yeah. I think that's just about good. I certainly hope it is.
Yeah, I mean, on the Thunder end, all there was just Westbrook running into a brick
wall. Cantor, Cantor getting booed.
Yeah, Cantor got booed a bunch. Westbrook and Adams ran into a wall that was Gobert.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of brutal to watch. I mean, that's why we're only talking about the Jazz, because they really thoroughly neutralized the Thunder.
Yeah, yeah. you know, also I think we focus on individual teams a lot. You know, we sort of focus on the Magic and then the Grizzlies and the Thunder, or the Jazz rather, because, you know, I haven't been podcasting quite at the frequency that I hope to be. I mean, I think once the A team is fully implemented and all of that, it'd be cool to have like a daily show. Not like I'm not going to be Jon Stewart, but a daily NBA show. Did you know that I changed the name? It's not Almighty Ball on the Almighty Podcast, although I think I introduced it as that for SEO purposes. It's Almighty Ball and NBA Show. So
good to know.
Yeah.
Well,
so thanks for listening to Almighty Ball and NBA Show.
Colin Lundgaard shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. And we'll be back doing this somewhat more regularly.
Yeah.
Going forward.
Lux has been mad busy. He's getting a job selling drugs.
That's not true really at all.
He's getting a job doing blogging for...
I might get a job writing a blog.
Right. Well, but for a, supplements thing.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
We'll talk about
that. He's not actually selling drugs.
But point being, hopefully...
You don't sell drugs, right?
No.
Okay, great.
Hopefully...
I don't do drugs. Hopefully I could we'll get run everything. This network if I did drugs.
No, I don't think you could.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we'll be able to get back on doing two or three of these a week like we were doing before.
Yeah.
And not giving you 1 week gaps in the middle.
And I can fill out the other days with, my lovely podcast. Hoping to be interacting with the A-team more soon. Make sure, probably the safest bet would be to just subscribe to the Almighty Baller Podcast Network feed on iTunes. Then you can find all of our shows and everything that we're doing here at the network. I would definitely appreciate that. You know, if you haven't gotten a chance to, you know, leave a 5-star rating on my show or the network or, you know, any of the Almighty Baller shows, just, you know, go ahead, do that. Doing us a favor. And, of course, use that promo code Almighty on Glasses USA. Get a whopping 55% off your first purchase.
I'm still amazed by that percentage.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again, y'all, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to this edition of Unguarded Shooting, brought to you by Glasses USA and Michael Luxembourg, the most beautiful man. What we were talking about, like, I want to be a beautiful lady. By Michael Luxembourg, the most beautiful lady.
That's me.
If you think trains will stop if they see a car on the tracks, you're right, they will. About a mile after they hit you. In 2015 alone, 230 people were killed at railroad crossings. Don't become the next fatality. Stop. Trains can't. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.